that hit deep to convince people, to educate people, especially those in uniforms. They can be court-martialed. They can be fired for following unlawful orders. All sorts of organizations need to start mobilizing their people and educating people on this subject. We need political leadership from people that are in office right now to talk about this. We need everyday people who are asking, what can I do? We need them to understand these things so that we can enlarge the demonstrations and telling the officers who they are afraid of that only lawful order should be followed.
On that note, Jan Goodman, attorney at law, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is John Crumshoe with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report.
On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission.
KPFK, now in our fund drive. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. First, I wanted to wish my mom a happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Thank you for being an incredible mother, teacher, and friend, for always showing me by example how to live with integrity, lead with love, and stand always for justice and peace. I love you so much. Happy Mother's Day, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. And thank you to all of you, the listeners, for tuning in today. I just want to remind everyone that we are in Fund Drive, so please pledge your support. 818-985-5735 is how you can do it. And it's through pledging your support and continuing to make sure that we stay alive as KPFK that allows us to bring conversations like the one we're going to talk about today, which is about Yemen. Again, there is a lot in the news that's being reported on about Yemen. But today, and what we're always able to do on KPFK, is talk about what is really happening in Yemen that is not being reported in most media, both mainstream and actually, quite frankly, even within alternative media. And so today we are going to be able to bring through this amazing expert that we have coming on that's joined us before. We're always so grateful for her to join us on Middle East in Focus to talk about what is really happening in Yemen and give us the insight that we need to figure out what we can do to stop the atrocities that are happening. So with us today to discuss the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen, Israel's bombing of Yemen's main airport that just recently happened, the U.S. bombing of Yemen under the Trump administration, and the Trump administration's recent announcement that it will supposedly stop bombing Yemen, is our guest, Dr. Shireen El-Adeimi, an assistant professor at Michigan State University and a non-resident fellow at Quincy Institute. Since 2015, Dr. El-Adeimi has played a leading role as an anti-war and anti-intervention advocate, focusing on the United States' participation in assisting the Saudi and UAE-led intervention in her country of birth, Yemen. Welcome back again, Shireen El-Adeimi, to Middle East in Focus.
Thanks so much, Negwa. It's good to be back.
So we are just going to dive right in, Dr. El-Adeimi. Can we first talk about the state of the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen? The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has unveiled a new nutrition initiative that's aimed at accelerating efforts to reduce undernutrition among children and vulnerable populations in Yemen. The program was launched in collaboration with other global partners seeking to address this ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen that, again, as I sort of alluded to in my intro, that quite frankly isn't being talked enough about within all types of media. Can you talk about what is the current situation with respect to the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen? And what are the primary factors that are perpetuating this humanitarian crisis?
Yeah, so this is an important aspect, like you said. As you know, Yemen has been under you know, undergoing war, blockade, the worst humanitarian crisis in the world for many, many years, at least since 2015. And prior to that also was a, you know, I hate to use this terminology, but what, the poorest country in the Middle East, economically deprived, exploited for many decades. And so the people of Yemen have already been suffering prior to any of this. And now, since the last 10 years, in the last 10 years, they've seen, unimaginable crises. The economy has collapsed. The healthcare system has collapsed. And the fact that it's even functioning at all, honestly, is impressive. But you're really dealing here with a country that is under blockade, and the blockade has been the primary driver of all of this. And the blockade, this is a naval blockade, an aerial blockade, a land blockade that was, you know, sanctioned by the United Nations under the guise of, you know, preventing arms from, supposedly the flow of arms from Iran, but has really resulted in starving Yemen out, preventing the flow of aid, and also preventing Yemen from trade, right? Oil exports and all of that. The blockade was eased after the Saudi Yemeni ceasefire was announced in 2022, but the country is still not free. It's still under the, you know, Sana'a Airport, for example, is heavily regulated by the Saudis and, you know, through the UN. And so the country is still suffering the damage of the war. The war hasn't fully resolved itself. There are parts of the country that are still occupied by the UAE and the Saudis through their Yemeni proxies. And so the conflict is far from over, and it's led to, you know, besides the blockade, of course, we also have the bombardment of hospitals and health systems. And so it's just the prolonged effects of this.
Wow, I have so many follow-ups from just this first response. So first, you said parts of the country are still occupied by the UAE, Saudis, and its proxies. Can you talk a little bit about what that occupation looks like?
So the Saudis, if you remember, the line we were told since 2015 was that the Saudis are coming to rescue Yemenis from, you know, Ansar Allah, the Houthis, and to reinstate the quote unquote legitimate president of Yemen, the internationally recognized president of Yemen. At the time, this was President Hadi, who was the interim president of Yemen following the Arab Spring in 2011. And he was under a lot of pressure to form a government, to bring in various voices to the table. And then when that broke down, there was the Ansar Allah, the Houthis, who took over the capital in late 2014 and tried to instill pressure on him to reach an agreement with them and with other factions in the country. That didn't work out. He ended up fleeing to Saudi Arabia, and Saudi supposedly came to his defense. That's not, of course, why Saudi entered Yemen. Saudi has long been involved in Yemeni politics and had their thumb over Yemen, or has tried to at least to prevent any kind of, actually to prevent what we're seeing right now, control of the Red Sea through Bab al-Mandab, right? Controlling international shipping. That's Yemen's geopolitical location that allows it to control international shipping if they wanted to. And so when that wasn't working out, you know, almost 8-9 years of bombardment and blockade didn't really result in anything. The Saudis ended up kind of shoving aside this internationally recognized president, literally telling him to resign. And instead, they formed a council of 8 men, 4 of whom are loyal to the Saudis, four of whom are loyal to the UAE, and most of whom had, you know, formed different armed groups to fight the Houthis over the last decade. And now they're magically, this council of 8 men, they're the internationally recognized government of Yemen, and, you know, the facade continues. So even though they have this agreement with the Houthis in northern Yemen, who control the areas, it's a smaller area of land, but it's where most of the population resides, the rest of the country is still under control of these people and these armed groups, Some of them are loyal to the Saudis. Some of them are loyal to the UAE. The UAE is occupying Yemeni islands and running tourism tours to these islands. And it's really just gone unchecked. No pressure from the international community to give back these islands. No pressure to stop backing these local groups and funding the militias. Even when some of them have completely divergent expectations and goals. So some of them, for example, are the secessionists who want to secede from the union altogether. Those are backed by the UAE. The rest are backed by Saudi Arabia.
So, and then when you say the international community, are you talking about like the United Nations? And are there any countries that are not supporting this, what could technically be described as an illegal occupation of Yemeni land by these Council of Eight men that are really working as agents of the UAE and Saudi Arabia?
I mean, Yemen has had no representation. They've had to fight for themselves. And so when you have a country ruled by men who are residing in Saudi Arabia, like its previous interim president was, and most of these men are now, or residing in the UAE, and they're just doing what they're told, and they're the internationally recognized government, then there is no representation for this country, which is why you've seen the Houthis gain so much power in Yemen, because they were seen as the people who stayed and fought for the country. So even though they are not technically a state actor, they've been the de facto government in Yemen for the past 10 years. So no, there are no calls for the UAE to stop doing what it's doing, for the Saudis to stop funding whoever they're funding. It was, in fact, what we've seen is frankly a betrayal of the international community. You know, the flow of arms supplies over the last decade, France, Germany, Spain, Australia, Canada, all of these countries benefiting from the chaos in Yemen, enriching themselves. And so they really don't stand any ground. And I think the only country that's been useful to Yemen is Oman and continues to play a major role. It's the only neighbor of Yemen that didn't directly involve itself in the bombing of Yemen, and has played a key role as a negotiator. They're respected for that. And even now we're going to talk about, I'm sure, the ceasefire between Trump and Ansarullah, and it's through Oman. And so they've been playing a key role in trying to be negotiating peace, but haven't gone as far as, you know, asking for UAE and Saudi Arabia to lift any kind of influence over Yemen. They're, I think, trying to be seen as a neutral third party.
So, oh my gosh, it's like I have so many questions. I'm like, oh, we're not going to have enough time in a half hour. This is why I love having you on, because I feel like I learned so much in our conversations. So, one clarifying point, because you brought up an interesting irony, is that the United Nations, in fact, has sanctioned essentially these blockades on Yemen, which has been a major contributing factor to the humanitarian crisis in Yemen, while simultaneously calling out the humanitarian crisis in Yemen, with the United Nations Children's Fund unveiling this new nutrition initiative to reduce undernutrition among children and vulnerable populations in Yemen that has resulted from all of this. Can you comment on that, irony?
Yeah. I mean, it's called Security Council Resolution 2216. It was passed in April 2015, which was just a month after the Saudis started bombing Yemen. And the Saudis initially wrote the resolution, and they put it forth to the Security Council. And there were some talks that maybe Russia would veto it. You know, that was the only kind of chance that this wouldn't go through. But Russia abstained, and it went through. And it's what's allowed the war to become as vicious as it has become. It's what allowed the blockade to happen. It basically sanctioned Saudi Arabia to block any ship coming through Yemen's ports, block any plane coming through Yemen's airspace, block any vehicle coming through Yemen's land border with Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, to inspect them for, again, this whole myth that we're told. This is the WMD's exist in Iraq story, which is Iran is fueling, you know, the Houthis in Yemen. So to block any arms shipments from Iran, they instated this UN-backed resolution that allowed the Saudis to take on this role. And then, you know, of course, they used it then to stop the flow of aid, to stop trade, to cause malnutrition. At some point, a child in Yemen under the age of 5 was dying every 30 seconds. And so, you know, like it's hypocritical. It's akin to the U.S. throwing aid at Yemen when they've been, again, directly causing their destruction for the last decade. So you have these organizations. Like I said, it's a deep betrayal of the international community, including the UN.
So now let's bring in the United States and U.S. policies in Yemen. Now, you spoke about how there was this somewhat of a ceasefire in 2022, a Saudi ceasefire in 2022. Can you talk about, and, you know, again, the Saudi attacks on Yemen were a Saudi-U.S.-led attacks on Yemen. So now there's this 2022 supposed ceasefire. Can you talk about, though, the Trump administration's attack on Yemen since Trump came into power and the differences and similarities between the Trump administration's policies against Yemen and attacks on Yemen versus the Biden administration's policies and attacks on Yemen, which was, again, I want to make clear, these attacks were also happening under Biden as well.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, and I want to also remind people of the War Powers Act, which prevents direct U.S. intervention or war in any country without congressional approval. And the only time the first time the War Powers Act actually passed in this country was in 2019 in the context of Yemen. This was during Trump's first administration, and his support, which began with Obama, that continued to Trump and Biden, but his support to the Saudis and the UAE amounted to, you know, direct intervention per this passing of the War Powers, because the Saudis could not function, the UAE could not function without support from the United States. So they were refueling jets mid-air. They were, you know, choosing targets with them. They were providing the intelligence. They were doing spare part maintenance, all of that. And you and I have spoken about that over the years. That all stopped when the Saudis and Yemenis had their, you know, kind of this tenuous ceasefire that lifted the blockade, but not really stopped bombing, but still controls part of the country and so on. And that's the stalemate we're at right now. But it also kind of shows the Saudi frustration because they couldn't do anything to reinstate any of their influence in Yemen. They thought this war was going to be over in 3 weeks, 2-3 weeks, and it lasted 8 years. And so they essentially gave up and came up with this agreement. Then we had a bit of a lull. And in response to the genocide in Gaza, Yemen, with everything to lose, including the ceasefire, including peace for the first time in a decade, decided to support the Palestinians in Gaza by blockading the Red Sea, by basically stopping any ships going to Israel specifically, as part of their obligation under the Geneva Conventions to stop genocide. And so in response, Biden put together Operation, what does he call it, Prosperity Guardian. So he's going to protect capitalism, but really protect Israel, and began launching direct airstrikes in Yemen. Again, no congressional approval, complete violation of U.S. Constitution. And I think those attacks definitely caused destruction in Yemen, definitely led to civilians being killed, but they were, I think, performative in a sense, like trying to show force, but also to try to, manage the situation, show that he's doing something to support Israel, but it wasn't as destructive as what we're seeing right now with Trump, which essentially escalated all of that.
So, with us today to discuss the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen, Israel's bombing of Yemen's main airport, U.S. bombing of Yemen under the Trump administration, and the Trump administration's announcement that it will supposedly stop bombing Yemen is our guest, Dr. Shireen El-Adeimi, an assistant professor at Michigan State University and a non-resident fellow at the Quincy Institute. Dr. El-Adeimi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. For some reason, I thought we might have gotten cut off. Okay. So can you talk about specifically what the attacks by the Trump administration have looked like in his first 100 days in office, the second time around. And what many rights activists have called out as, again, a serious violation of international humanitarian laws, international laws, because of the fact that it is actually killing civilians.
Yeah, so the first thing Trump did was he reinstated Ansar Allah as foreign terrorist, FTO designation. What happened was that in his very last week of office and during his first term, he kind of did this as a favor to the UAE. The UAE was lobbying very hard for this label to stick, and he gave it to them on the way out. And Biden came and reversed the designation, saying like, oh, this is going to cause a lot of humanitarian, you know, just exacerbate the humanitarian crisis in Yemen, and it's just a total political move, and so we're going to undo the designation. Fast forward a couple of years, when Biden started bombing Yemen directly, he gave them a special designation terrorist label. So not a full FTO, but kind of like a form of designation that wouldn't impact the humanitarian situation. Like, it would still allow the flow of aid and so on. But still a political move, right? They're not terrorists. You're just labeling them as terrorists so that you could get your political points in. Trump, when he began, he instated the full FTO again. So again, this is going to impact humanitarian flow of aid, and began bombing viciously. So there were attacks in April that killed at least 68 migrants, African migrants, in northern Yemen. There were attacks on oil facilities in Yemen. There were attacks on various other areas in Yemen, one that also killed over 70 people. So huge humanitarian tolls. And again, completely, besides the fact that it's immoral and, you know, this is illegal under international humanitarian law, illegal under U.S. Constitution. But he's trying to defend Israel and trying to stop them from attacking ships in the Red Sea, which, by the way, they started attacking U.S. ships as well because of Biden's attacks on Yemen. And so Trump has escalated, definitely. I think he's calling it Operation Rough Rider, and definitely a deadly show of strength, hitting markets, residential areas, all sorts of places in Yemen over the last several months.
And we'll talk about this recent announcement for the U.S. to supposedly stop bombing Yemen. But before we get into that, I want to now bring in Israel into the conversation. Israel has recently bombed parts of Yemen's capital, Sana'a, and the main international airport. And in a statement, the Houthi Political Bureau denounced the attack, stating, quote, targeting Yemeni ports, Sana'a airport, cement factories, and power plants aims to impose a blockade on the Yemeni people, end quote. And then they went on to state that Israeli and U.S. attacks on Yemen, quote, will not deter Yemen from continuing its support for Gaza, end quote. And as you importantly pointed out now, and as we've talked about in previous shows, that really, you know, Yemen and Yemenis sort of collectively, a majority of Yemenis in Yemen are supporting Palestinians and the fight against genocide of Palestinians, despite all that they are dealing with in terms of their own humanitarian crisis, and that really the attacks against Israel and the attacks in support for Gaza and against the genocide is really an act of defense against genocide based on being a signatory of the Convention Against Torture. I mean, I'm sorry, the Convention Against Genocide. Can you talk about how Yemen has been continuing its support for Gaza and its active support to end the genocide of Palestinians, one of the only countries in the world to be doing this?
It's really just incredible that more countries didn't feel the need or felt like that they could, or that they should, given that they are signatories. And like I said, Yemen is yes, a signatory, but technically this particular government is not internationally recognized. There's only maybe a couple of countries, maybe Iran recognizes them as a government, but they're not internationally recognized, and yet they felt the need to come to Gaza's defense, to Palestine's defense, under this obligation to stop genocide. Like, we're not talking about something small here. We're talking about the worst thing that humans can do to one another, genocide. And, you know, they're getting punished for doing their part in supporting the people of Palestine. So, and like I said, they have everything to lose. This is not a politically, this defies political theory. They should not be doing this. They're not doing this for their own sake. They have lots to lose. And yet they're supporting the Palestinians. The way they've done this is that, of course, since you see millions of Yemenis showing up every single Friday over the past 19 months to show their support, massive protests around the country. Yemen has sent drones and long-range missiles to Israel, and importantly has used their location, their strategic location in the Red Sea, to stop ships from flowing to Israel and have impacted the Israeli economy as a result.
And you know, something you mentioned is that U.S.'s attacks on Yemen is in part to show its support of Israel. Can you talk about how U.S. and Israeli attacks on Yemen are tied to Yemen's support for Gaza and Yemen's defense against genocide? And also, what are some of the other reasons for their attacks on Yemen? You sort of alluded to it with respect to the this idea of other countries really wanting control over this the international shipping access at the Red Sea.
I missed the last part of your question. It cut off a little bit.
Oh, no worries. I was just asking, can you talk a little bit about how U.S. and Israeli attacks on Yemen are tied to Yemen's support for Gaza, but also are tied to some other reasons, including possibly what you had mentioned to earlier on about this interest by other countries in having control of the Red Sea and this international shipping access of the Red Sea.
So you know what was very telling? The signal leaks that we heard about. So the signal chat where they added the reporter from the Atlantic, and they were talking about bombing Yemen. And of course, what got the mainstream news and what got their attention was that, oh, how could they have used signal to talk about these things, not how could they have been talking, how are they talking about doing this illegal, unconstitutional thing that is actually killing people on the ground and admitting to war crimes in this chat. In the chat, they were saying, well, one of their top missile guys just walked into a building and, you know, the building is now flattened. That is a war crime. And yet the news that we were hearing about was that, oh, they're using signal as a platform. But one of the most revealing things, I think, in my opinion, in that chat was J.D. Vance saying that here we are, we're supposed to rescue the Europeans again. And he mentioned certain figures of how much international shipping is affected by the Houthis blockade of the Red Sea. So he's like, it's not that significant to the U.S., but it's significant to Europe. Europe should be defending themselves. Why should we come to their defense again? This is initially why he was reluctant to support the operation, which then, you know, various people in the chat were saying, no, we should do this and let's do it. And so he agreed. So that is the reason they're coming. You know, sure, Israel, the U.S. has, you know, done everything it could, even at its going against its own interests to defend Israel. That's one aspect of it. But the main aspect here is also trying to protect capitalism, the flow of commerce through the Red Sea. It's not just oil that goes through the Red Sea every single day, but, you know, Saudi oil, other OPEC countries' oil, but also just international shipping. And if you remember a few years ago when there was a cargo ship stuck in the northern Red Sea in Egypt, it was affecting, you know, people's Amazon orders and whatnot. Well, Yemen is part of that same exact lane, the shipping lane, Bab al-Mandab, and then it goes up to Sina through Europe and Asia. And so it's been a very strategic point of entry, a chokehold, and continues to be. It's why Saudi Arabia has always had an interest in having say, political say over what happens in Yemen, because they don't want the destruction of any shipping. And Yemen has used this location, by the way, they've used this card in the past, also in defense of Palestine. In 1973, when there was the war, the October war, and Yemen used the blockade temporarily in the Red Sea to support Palestine. So there is precedence for this, but of course not at this large scale.
And we're going to have to bring you back, Dr. Shireen El-Adeimi, to talk about whether